Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. We're going to talk about the budget standoff in the West Virginia legislature. How will it be resolved? Will it be resolved? And more on our Struggle to Stay series with the young woman from Mason County, Amanda Cadel. And joining me is Lori Lynn, a lawyer and a conservative columnist who tweets at WV Pundit. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And Rick Wilson is off this week. He's presenting at an international goat herding conference in Switzerland. So, hey, Rick, if you're listening from Switzerland, hope you're doing well. The West Virginia legislature is in special session right now trying to balance the budget. Lori Lynn, do you think they will?
Well, they kind of have to, don't they? I mean, we don't even apparently have a furlough process. So at some point, everything just grinds to a halt. I can't see that happening. That would be just terribly irresponsible.
And really bad politics
for everybody.
Senator Cole, for the Democrats, you name
it. Yes, yes. So, yes, I think they will. When they will and how they will, of course, is up in the air.
You know, there are lots of ways to say it. Mexican standoff, game of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You have the governor, and he has his opening salvo, which was basically, let's just raise a whole bunch of taxes.
Yep. Yeah, well, obviously the Democrats would prefer to make up the hole largely with new taxes as much as possible. The Republicans would prefer fewer taxes and
Or no taxes
and cutting the budget. So it is a little bit like a game of chicken, those two forces coming at each other. I hope that it will end up being a combination of the two.
There's been a lot of talk about who's to blame for having to have a special session. Democrats and Democratic allies blaming the Republicans for not passing a budget on time. Meanwhile, the Republicans are saying, hey, in the last few days, basically, of the regular session, the governor came back and said, oops, there's going to be a bigger budget hole than we predicted. So who's at fault there?
Well, yeah, every time you check back in, the hole has gotten bigger. And not just a little bit bigger, it just grows and grows and grows by millions and millions. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily the governor's fault. I don't know if he's been hiding it. It's just kind of as the information comes in about the tax receipts, they continue to be lower than expected. So, you know, I think the Republicans have a good point about, hey, we didn't know the magnitude of this when we were in session necessarily, but I don't think you can necessarily blame Tomlin for all of that. The point is, we know now, what are we going to do about it?
It is true that the House and the Senate separately had come up with plans that would have balanced the budget based on the numbers they were given. So when they say that we had a plan, they're right, but they had two different plans.
Right, and the Senate had passed the tobacco tax, right? And then the House said, no way, we're not going to do this.
And so it's not entirely true that the legislature had a plan to balance the budget. They had two competing plans, and they didn't know how to reconcile those in time, I don't think, even if the governor hadn't come back.
Right.
Then again, you know, $25,000 a day is the cost of the special session, roughly. Really, considering the depth of the crisis that we're in and the speed upon which it came, I don't know if it's really all that fair to be criticizing. I mean, don't we want to have our lawmakers to have some time and energy to process the huge job of coming to a balance and making sure that the cuts that are made are responsible?
Yeah, sure. No, I agree. I mean, talk to your fellow members of the media who have, you know, the ticker running up each day. And you can't, as a legislator, not be sensitive to that. I agree. I think it's kind of silly to focus on that, which is really peanuts compared to the numbers that they're throwing around. My take on it is really, you're not seeing a lot of profiles in courage from anyone. If you look at the Democratic side, they couldn't get anyone other than Senator Kessler, who isn't up for reelection, to sponsor any of these bills. You know, the governor is asking for tax increases. No Democrat will put their name on it. Mm-hmm. There's that on that side. Then on the Republican side, they want the governor to expand his call now to include budget cuts.
Most of which, Ashton Mara reported, these are things that the governor, with one exception I'll talk about in a second, these are things that the governor asked for and the legislature did not pass during the regular session.
Right. So they want to use the governor calling for this as cover for them to do it they could actually, I think it, most people believe they could actually go ahead and do this. But what they want is for the governor to actually formally expand his call. So then they can say, well, the governor wants us to do this. So here we are.
Each of these things has a constituency. There's the Greyhound Breeders Fund. Know who that is. Mm-hmm. There's the Racetrack Modernization Fund. This is money that goes back to the racetracks to help them expand. And I need to say, the one thing that was new was the elimination of the Department for Education in the Arts. It's about $850,000. And I should disclose that West Virginia Public Broadcasting is underneath the Education and the Arts Department. And Secretary Kate Goodwin is my direct supervisor, as well as my board of directors. And so I should disclose that.
But it wouldn't be eliminating you. It would just be eliminating the layer above you.
Okay? Yes. If Rick was here, he'd be talking about the need to privatize West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
That's where Rick really is now, I have to say. He's in Washington lobbying
for the elimination of public broadcasting funding entirely. We're a state agency, and we receive about 45% of our income from the state right now. We've taken $1 million in cuts over the last 3 years. I don't know how much more we're going to get this time. And as a state agency, I can say my personal experience is I'd really like to know so I can plan, because if we need to do things, we need to give people time to prepare. Real people and real lives are at stake now. I don't think they're going to be able to cut a ton more out of government over the next couple of years without having some serious layoffs. And I think the governor said this. You can't really wait till July 1st in the new fiscal year. You really need to know by June 1st.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the things on the table. We talked about the tobacco tax. It's fascinating to me that it seems like there's a consensus around a 45 cent increase.
Which would bring it to a dollar per pack, right?
Which brings it to a dollar per pack, which is still lower than the majority of our surrounding states. At the same time, there's a big fight over whether all the details, should the tobacco tax be increased on smokeless tobacco? And there was one single Senator Tacubo, who's a lung doctor from here in Kanawha County, who said he wouldn't vote for a tobacco increase that didn't also have the smokeless tobacco increase in there. And therefore, now it's in there, but there's concern that the House won't want the smokeless tobacco increase. I mean...
Yeah, I'm not sure what the fuss is over the smokeless versus... I don't really understand that. I mean, there's some people in the House who are just adamantly opposed to any tax increase. They will not vote for any tax increase. It's a minority of the Republicans, so... I think we will get the increase in the tobacco tax, but
what makes you think that? Let me ask you. There was a meeting between the so-called Liberty Caucus, which is a group of about 10 or so House Republicans who are very conservative, and then the Democrats. They got together and had a meeting that some of the House leadership, according to Hobby Kirchival, was not real happy about. Do you think there's some sort of shenanigans going on there?
Well, remember when it failed before, it failed because there were people who didn't want it at all, and then there were people who wanted it to be higher, right? Some of the Democrats thought that it would reduce smoking more if we raised it actually a dollar, so it would be $1.55. Those people should, if they aren't already, you know, at this point, the goal is to get a deal and to raise the revenue.
Their goal could actually be to blow the whole thing up, blame the failure on the leadership, and try to run on it. So Senator Blair at one point takes to the floor and says basically, hey guys, if we don't cut government now, when are we ever going to cut government? And it is interesting that a party that ran on cutting the size of government is still running on it. When they get in and actually try to cut, discover that's not as easy as it looks.
It's really, really hard, because every cut that you try to make, that money is helping someone, right? You hope, in fact, that that's the case, because if it's not helping someone, why are we spending it in the first place?
And sometimes, I mean, it's funny, running a state agency, I see it both internally but also with other state agencies. A lot of things that we do are legally mandated.
Yep.
You don't get to stop doing them because, you know, there are lots of reasons for that. When I was a reporter, Lori, I did a whole series on the mental health in West Virginia. And one thing that happened, it's a long story, I'll try to make it short, is that there was a 40% reduction in about 1 or 2 years in state spending on mental health. And that was in part because we got caught by the federal government doing some fraudulent things, and we had to pay it back. But it was also just because people wanted to try to save some money. And so they reduced the amount of spending on that, but then we were able to document a huge increase in emergency room spending. and we were able to show that the diagnosis that was causing that was psychosis. And emergency room visits are very expensive. Mm-hmm. There was a huge increase in institutionalizing people. And when the state puts someone in a state hospital as opposed to taking care of them in the community, Medicaid and the federal Medicaid program doesn't help. That's all state dollars. Yep. And then finally, prisons. And all of prison spending is state money. And so our argument was that a cut in a Medicaid program that helps mentally ill people can actually cost you more money on the backside. And that's the sort of thing. I think the people like House Speaker Armstead, Senator Cole, I think they understand this, and they're trying to avoid those sorts of bad cuts that end up costing more in the future. But it's hard to do.
Yeah, and sometimes the cuts that are the most obvious are very politically difficult, which is why we still have the Greyhound breeding program, even though, you know, almost no one thinks that that's a good idea. And now getting rid of that is not going to solve the problem. But if you were able to see that, at least, you know, it would give you confidence that people are at least trying to make the right decisions. When you see things like that just persisting and persisting, it is pretty depressing. But, you know, again, we're seeing it, it's cold, hard reality. You just can't finesse it. After a certain point, we do not have the money.
Well, and we can finesse it for one more year, apparently, because I think what will happen is there's some one-time money you can sweep accounts.
Yeah.
And then also the rainy day fund is there, $800 million or so. Governor doesn't like that. That's kind of the governor's baby. If the governor has someone that he loves almost as much as his own children, I think it's the rainy day fund. and so he really won't want to let go of that. But that seems like at some point, is going to be the answer for this year.
And that's politically dicey too, though, because, you know, if I were running for office, I wouldn't want to have my opponent saying, you know, instead of making a hard decision, she voted to just, you know, drain our rainy day fund. I think that, you know, psychologically is something that is very nice to have, and we're very lucky to have it.
So what do you think is going to happen if we have a Senator Cole as the new governor versus Jim Justice is the new governor? Because really, the governor has a huge role in this. And Senator Cole is saying, we can't really dig into all these agencies and make these cuts, but when I'm governor, I'll have the time and the energy to do so. So he's promising more cuts. What do you think the difference is going to be between those two as governor?
Yeah, it's hard to say because Justice has really been hard to pin down so far about, you know, what specifically he would do. There's a lot of kind of magical thinking about, well, maybe mining will come back. And that's possible, yeah, particularly with the natural gas. You know, you hope that the severance tax is not always going to be in quite this bad shape. But yeah, I think Cole is saying, if you elect me, I'll get in there. I'll really tinker around, you know, line by line. And then there is some merit to that, certainly. I'm sure there is some fat still to be cut. Mm-hmm. We also haven't talked about PEIA. Raising premiums there would go a long way toward...
And they are raising them some even this year, even under the... Because there's a $120 million hole, and they're only filling $43 million of it with state money, so the rest of that is coming from different increases.
Yeah. Benefit cuts.
And all
which
that.
Have been ongoing for years. I mean, that's how they've kept it in balance.
One of the things that we need to have a whole show on, and we need Rick to be here for, really, is size of state government.
Yeah.
Because by most measures, we have a very large, as a percent of our population, and definitely as a percent of per capita income, a large state government. And we should have a longer conversation about why that is and whether that's really healthy for the state.
So, Scott, Rick is not here to do our Bible verse. Can you step in and step up?
I think I can. Thinking about all these cuts and who gets hurt and everything, I always wonder about this song by Billie Holiday, God Bless the Child that's Got His Own.
Them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is new.
Them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. I always wondered about that. First of all, what a depressing line.
Yep.
So I tracked it down, and it appears to be an allusion to Luke 8:18. Then pay attention to how you listen, for to those who have, more shall be given, and for those who do not have, even what they seem to have will be taken away. Mm. It's either Jesus not really talking about how the world should be, but talking about how the world is. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, this is the parable about the sower in the field. Some of the seeds fall on rocky ground. Mm-hmm. Some of it falls on fertile ground. The word of God falls on all sorts of different ears. And I think part of the interpretation is those who are already open to learning and growth will learn and grow more. And those who are closed to it will continue to be shut out from it. Whether it's about income inequality or about your ability to grow and develop and learn, I just think it's a fascinating verse and also a great song. So, Front Porchians, a great way to listen to us is through our podcast. If you subscribe to our podcast, you can make sure that you don't miss a single minute of The Front Porch. Subscribe on iTunes, on Google Play, or SoundCloud, or go to our website, wvpublic.org, and you can subscribe that way. And while you're there, do us a huge favor and give us a review, because that helps other people to find The Front Porch. And thanks. Over the past several months, we've been talking about the struggle to stay in West Virginia. We've spoken to people who've left, people who are considering leaving, and people who've made the conscious decision to stay despite the sacrifices. You can put Amanda Cadle in that last camp. Amanda grew up in Mason County and is joining us today. Hey, Amanda.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Amanda, first of all, tell us where you work.
I work for UPS Freight in Nitro. I'm an operations supervisor there.
And you grew up in Leon in Mason County.
I did.
Still live in Putnam County. Mm-hmm. And ran for the House of Delegates, right? Why did you run for the House of Delegates, and what happened?
Well, I've been interested in being involved in government politics for quite a while. I started working on campaigns when I was 14 years old, so I've always been interested in being a part of a positive change in the area.
And how'd the primary go for you?
I ended up finishing in fifth place, which was kind of surprising.
So we're bringing you in today because you reached out to us and you sent us an email about some of your experiences with your struggle to stay. Start by talking about growing up and your family, because struggle to stay isn't just about you. It was also mm-hmm. about your parents.
Yeah. So I grew up in Leon on a 200-acre family farm. It's been in my family now for over 100 years. So that's something that's very important to us. It's a big part of our family and who we are.
What kind of a farm is it?
Currently, we're not doing that much. Growing up, we had Hereford cattle we raised for beef. We raised organic produce. We raised a lot of hay. We sold to horse farms. Mm-hmm. So just kind of a mixture of things. Just growing up there, it was a great experience learning how to work hard, learning how to just learning a lot of good values. And that's something that was important to my parents. My dad basically grew up there, and it's something he wanted to pass down to his children. And when my mom married into the family, it became important to her as well. And
how did you all survive? I know, being farmers sometimes in West Virginia isn't enough to be able to make it as a family. So what did your folks do?
Yeah, so my dad actually had to... he worked other jobs the whole time I was growing up, and he was a logger for a while and a truck driver for a while, and then he became a heavy equipment operator, and he was working locally, and his job was running out, his bid there, and he wasn't sure what he was going to do, and he was approached by an environmental company that saw him working. He was working at one of the power plants. The environmental company offered him a job to be a heavy equipment operator. They were really impressed with his work. The only catch was he was going to have to get on a plane next week to go to California for the next 2 months. Mm-hmm. So, he talked to my mom about it at the time. I was 3 years old. My oldest brother was six, and my youngest brother was just a baby. He was one and a half. So, we were all really small. And it's something they just kind of took a deep breath and felt like it was the right opportunity. He had been praying and thinking about what he was going to do next, and it just kind of presented itself. So he decided to take that job, and he's worked for different companies that have been bought out over the years, but basically the same job, heavy equipment operator for an environmental company. And he's traveled from then until now. And his schedule's varied. He used to be gone a month or several months at a time and home for 5 days for a while. He'd be gone through the week and home every weekend. So
while he was off earning, you and your siblings and your mom were taking care of the farm then
yeah.
at home.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a big responsibility for my mom to take on, to be there with three kids and the farm and everything that was going on. So that was, you know, that's a huge sacrifice that both of them paid for us to be able to stay.
Did they ever consider leaving? Did they talk about it? Was it just out of the question?
They had thought about it at different times. The way my dad's work moved him around every couple of months, it wasn't really a good option because he wasn't settled in any certain area. He's worked anywhere from California, Alaska, Florida, New York, just all over the place. But there was about a 10-year span where he was pretty centrally located in North Carolina. And a lot of people asked, and my parents kind of talked about, should we move there? Would it be better for our family? Would it be easier? By then, me and my brothers were a little bit older. And we had mixed feelings about it too. You know, it was tough, but really it came down to, we really wanted to stay in West Virginia. We really wanted to keep that land in our family.
You know, hearing that, it amazes me the lengths to which people already go to stay in West Virginia. And you hear stories about miners who get laid off in one area of the state, moving 6, 8, 10 hours away to mm-hmm. a different mining job, but keeping their family. Mm-hmm. What is it? You say it as if it's a given that, of course, we want to stay here. But people in other places don't necessarily have that strong of a tie to the land and the place they live. What's different?
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. It's hard to explain. My family's been here since before West Virginia existed as a state, and there's so much natural beauty. There's something about the people. The people here are good people, hardworking people, family people. I don't know, it's difficult to explain, but there definitely is like this deep desire to stay and kind of this deep attachment to this state.
Can I flip that around a little bit? I imagine you know every single person in Leon.
Just about.
Okay, and they know you. Everybody knows all your business. Was there ever a time when you kind of wish that maybe, you know, you were free of all of those connections and obligations?
Yeah. I've lived other places. I've lived outside of West Virginia and kind of got the feeling of what it's like to be somewhere where there's so many different people that you can just kind of be anonymous when you go out or if you want to do something. And it was nice at first, but after a while, you kind of miss that. You know, you kind of miss that community, and you know the people you can trust, and you know the people who you kind of can't. And really, that's kind of a good thing.
So, if I were to ask you to describe yourself, you know, in adjectives, where would West Virginia fall? So, I mean, I would think Christian would be high up there, mm-hmm. maybe sister, maybe daughter. Is West Virginia like West Virginian top 5, top 10? How important is it to your identity?
Is it in your Twitter profile?
It is. Yes. I believe my picture says West Virginia born and raised. Mm-hmm. And it's an important part of who I am because I feel like the values that I got from growing up here has just really had a huge part in shaping the person that I am.
See, I just don't think there are many states where that's true. You know, mm-hmm. I think probably Texans yeah. feel pretty strongly about their state, but you know, you don't see Floridian in a lot
right.
of profiles.
Well, and you went away for college,
mm-hmm.
right? What
yeah.
was behind that decision?
Really, at the time, I was just looking at all kinds of different colleges, and I was raised in a Christian family, and I came to the decision that I wanted to go to a Christian university. Just looking around, I found that Oral Roberts University had a really strong academic program, and that was important to me, and that was the main thing behind my decision to go there. I didn't necessarily want to move away, but I was open to it as well. It's nice to see other parts of the world and kind of get that perspective. But my main decision behind it was just I wanted to go to a good academic Christian university.
So was that a culture shock for you, or did it feel more like home at Oral Roberts?
It was a little bit of both. Tulsa's a nice town. Oklahoma is kind of very conservative, a lot of farmers, so in some ways it's pretty similar.
It's a landscape.
Yeah. The landscape was very much a culture shock. You know, flat, windy, brown, very, very hot in the summers.
Sounds like you like it.
Yeah, you know all about that.
I know all about that. My wife, who's from West Virginia, says that where I come from, Iowa, is not fit for human habitation. But anyway, so it was a chance for you to see what a different experience would be like.
Yeah.
And then come back here anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And I had planned on coming back here no matter where I went to college. That was kind of part of my goal, was to take the things that I learned from wherever I ended up and be able to come back here and hopefully bring the positives back with me.
So do you think it is a struggle to stay or a decision to stay?
I think it's a little bit of both, because, I mean, I can definitely see the struggle that my family has had, but it's a struggle that we chose to take on. We didn't have to have that struggle if we would have decided to go somewhere else or settle somewhere else. So I think when you make that decision, there's going to be a struggle, but I explain it to people this way. There might be struggles that come, but I'm not tempted to leave. Like, I'm not actively looking to leave. It's just part of being here.
So you ran for office, you're politically active. What do you think West Virginia needs to do or stop doing in order to attract young people here and keep its young people here?
Well, definitely one of the main focuses that everyone's talking about, of course, is jobs. If you want people to stay, if you want people to be attracted, you've got to have a source of income. You got to have a stable economy, and with that comes things like better education and things to do and places to shop. But if you don't have a way for people to make a living, then they're not going to come here and they're not going to stay here.
And what's holding us back from having more good ways for people to make a living here?
I think we're starting to work on some of those issues. You know, obviously the coal industry has had a huge part in our economy, and it's slowing down and it's dying and it's hurting a lot of people here. So, you know, I think to try to diversify our economy, which a lot of people are starting to talk about, develop some other industries. We do have other natural resources that they're trying to develop, like natural gas.
You know, growing up in Leon, it's a little different in that. I imagine you didn't have a whole lot of coal miners.
Right.
In your community. Maybe you had some people that worked in the factories in the Kanawha Valley, or, you know, so it's a different model than what we usually talk about with West Virginia's economy. What do you think that is working maybe in the place where you live in Putnam County that's different from having to talk about coal and the decline in the coal industry?
What I see in Putnam County, there's especially in the area that I work, there's a lot of industry there. There's a lot of warehouses and manufacturing and things like that. And being right there along the river, you have a lot of flat land, which is hard to come by in this state. And you have a means of transportation with the river and being so close to the interstate. So that's going on in the part of Putnam County I'm in. Across the river there in South Putnam, of course, it's just really grown up. There's a lot of people who've moved there and maybe don't necessarily work there. A lot of people who live there work in Huntington or Charleston, either one. It's kind of a good place in between of each of the cities, so that's helped them as well.
So you grew up on a farm. Do you think we should be doing more with agriculture in our state? Jim Justice suggested that maybe we should grow, I think it was tomatoes. What could we be doing more, growing things, exporting things?
I think maybe we could be doing more. We don't have a lot of farmable land.
Right. We're not really known for anything particularly
right.
Agriculturally.
There is the Ohio River bottom tomatoes. Those are
really
pretty famous. Yeah, around the area. A lot of tomato farms, and it's on Ohio side and West Virginia side both, but it's really rich soil for that. And, you know, I think there's some parts in eastern West Virginia has a lot of sheep farming, so they manufacture wool. In Mason County in particular, though, there's a lot of really flat farmland, and it'd be good to see family farmers be able to make it on that. I'm not really sure what all the answers are to make that possible, but there are a lot of small family farms in Mason County.
Amanda, I don't know if you want to weigh in on this, but Lori, we've talked about whether it makes sense to pour a lot of economic development money into the coal fields and some of the communities that are struggling right now. Former Senator Oshel Crago, who represented Putnam County for a long time, used to talk about we need to water our flowers. Of course, the flowers he's talking about are places like Putnam County that are already growing. Mm-hmm. And his point is that money spent helping a growing area like that gives more jobs and more opportunities. Maybe people from places like Logan could move to Putnam County.
Yeah, I think I agree largely, but you know, again, you're asking people to leave their communities. I mean, Amanda's talked about the attachment isn't just to West Virginia, it's to her 200-acre farm. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, in theory, yes, but you also are asking people to pick up and move, and even if it's only a county or two counties away, sometimes that feels like a long trek.
Yeah, I agree. People don't really want to leave their communities, and it would be good to have options to be able to stay where they're at. I mean, I can see the point, and you want to water your flowers. Go with what's going and try to ride the momentum with that, but you can't have everyone move to one or two or three areas.
Amanda Cadle lives in Putnam County, is from Leon in Mason County, and she is a supervisor with UPS Freight and Nitro and part of our Struggle to Stay series. Amanda, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we're going to go out on Billie Holiday, God Bless the Child. Thanks for listening.
Them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.